Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. Okay, we said we'd start with a good news story, but tinged with very tragic undertones, because this very day, the Freedom of Galway is to be awarded to Patricia Burke Brogan, and posthumously, unfortunately and sadly, to Ina McEntee, who both worked to protect and assist residents of the former Magdalene Laundry in Galway during the 1960s. Ina McEntee in particular coordinated the escape of 15 women from the former laundry, helped by her husband and sons. It's a remarkable story. And to tell us more, she's been with us frequently over the last couple of years on the programme, PRO of the Two Mother and Babies Project, and a researcher on all of this topic, Breda Murphy. Good morning again, Breda. And thank you for joining us. Maybe if I put you up in line, it would help in regards to that. Thank you, Breda. Good morning again, Breda.
Good morning, Clem.
Now, Breda, as I said, it's a wonderful story. It sounds like something from an adventure, but of course with very, very sad and tragic undertones.
Yeah, Clem, I'd researched. I knew quite a lot about the Magdalene Laundry. I'd done a significant amount of research as a postgrad, and I suppose what struck me was that the two women in question, Patricia Burke Brogan, who had brought the story of the Magdalene, who was a novice nun, who witnessed the cruelty and who could not stay in the laundry and decided that she would write about it. And it took some 30 years almost for her writings to be published. And Ina McEntee, they were there around the same time in the 1960s. Ina McEntee was an ordinary and yet an extraordinary woman, simply because she was a young mother and she was working alongside the Magdalene women herself. The fact is that in Galway, at any one time, they employed four paid hands, as they call them. But today is hugely significant, and I'll tell you why. I had written to the mayor in February, and it was at the right time. I made the application to recognise these two women, and it came that on the International Women's Day, the mayor, Colette Connolly, announced that the women would indeed receive the freedom of the city. And looking at previous recipients since 1939, a large percentage of those are either presidents of Ireland, political leaders, or a large, significant amount, some 10, are popes or cardinals or monsignors or bishops, are from either Galway City or overseas. At no stage did the voice of the woman who was incarcerated unpaid, and the McAleese report has again let her down. And this was one way of rebalancing that injustice by bestowing those two ladies. Patricia is still alive, but sadly, Patricia's elderly now, and I'm not sure that she will be able to attend today. But for her, it is recognition of decades of work to have the Magdalene women heard, and heard in their own voice, their own experience. And the McEntees, Andy McEntee, who's the eldest son, Ina had three sons with her husband Hugh, and Andy was the eldest. He was 10 years of age when he was employed to do the work. They knew the Magdalene women because they used to look in at their mum as they passed from school.
No, just let me interject here, because Patricia Burke Brogan, you said she was a novice nun originally, did you? And she left the order, or certainly left the laundry. She wrote that play called Eclipsed in 1992, which dealt with the reality of the women in the Magdalene's laundry. Now, the story of this amazing woman, Ina McEntee, the late Ina McEntee. And by the way, what we're talking about today is that a special Galway City Council meeting will take place this afternoon, finally, to honour these women. And we'll get a little background from Breda in a moment as to how ultimately it has finally come to honouring these women. But take us back to those days where these women were in Many of them put there by their own families. Many put there by the local parish priest with the collusion of the Garda Síochána of the time or whatever else. I mean, society has to hang its head in shame because it was aware of what was going on, and most of it was that we can't have the shame, the scandal of somebody in the family being pregnant. These women, it needs to be stated now, did nothing wrong. And thousands of Irish women were incarcerated. Because, Breda, this Magdalen Laundry, you talked about 10-year-old Andy McEntee passing by. He used to look in the window, see his mam, who was a paid worker. She was not one of these unmarried mothers. Uh-huh. But what struck him was there were bars on the windows.
That's right. I think really we have to go back again and look at who writes the narrative of this. And the narrative, sadly, that's in the McAleese report that blames anybody else, plus the Commission's report into mother and baby homes, is actually false. It's misleading. So that families actually came to the laundry in Galway to get their daughter back. It wasn't allowed. This is in the diocesan records, and maybe Galway's unusual in that, because until the 1970s, the bishop ruled the Magdalen Laundry. The nuns were answerable to the bishop in Galway at that time. So monies were making their way to the diocesan office. It was one of the most profitable laundries. And of course it was because the women were not being paid. But the voices historically have been the male voices, the dominant voices when you look at the roll call of those who've received the freedom of Galway City and Dublin City and Cork, is always those who wrote the narrative and wrote the women out or said they were, you know, placed there by their families. I've looked at the records, and considering that a large proportion of the records are missing for Galway and missing for Dunleary, the Sisters of Mercy were in charge of those two laundries. There are none for Dunleary at all available.
No, so you make the point, Breda, sorry for coming across you there, about the Magdalen Laundry and the money it made. As a young boy growing up in Clare, I remember the Magdalen Laundry van used to call around the town. And householders, because not many people had washing machines at the time, and we're talking about the early 60s and stuff like that, and there was major problems in doing things like the sheets and the blankets. So when the Magdalen Laundry van came around, you gave those and you paid. But nobody ever realised that while this name on the truck said Magdalen Laundry, actually what it entailed was incarcerated women who were actually enslaved, performing free labour in these conditions. Now, we have chronicled the conditions, whatever, but let's focus on the story about the great Ina McEntee. What did she do?
Ina McEntee came to work there. She was Ina Kennedy. She had four sisters who themselves were in the religious orders. And Ina married Hugo, and they relocated back to Galway, and she got a job in the laundry. Now, she and Anna Magill was another lady who worked there, and they were both friendly to the girls. Now, they saw no difference in the girls. The girls, to them, resembled them. They had the same mannerisms, they liked the same things, and that's in the Eclipsed story as well by Patricia Burke Brogan. They were very much girls of their time, looking to Elvis and, you know, the Beatles and whatever was happening. But of course, that vibrancy that was within them was stifled out by the nuns. So for Ina, she saw the injustice, and her boys, three of them, the youngest then was possibly only about seven. So she hatched a plan, and it was that she was within, and she was able to open the door and let three out. And Andy, the eldest, was outside. Now, you'd probably need to know Galway for this, but the Magdalen Laundry is right within the city. It's a stone's throw from Eyre Square.
Yes.
And right beside it is St. Patrick's Avenue. And so the boys, one stood at the gate of the church, the next lad was Hugo, and then up at the van, the dad drove a van, a paper van, delivering papers, Hugh McEntee, was the youngest son, Declan, with the door of that van open. So basically, the three girls made their escape with Andy running ahead, meeting his brother up above at the gate of the church, and running on through a laneway to get into the van, and sped off up to the suburb of Merview where they lived. And they kept the women for maybe up to 2 weeks. Now, the local community there, Merview was an area like many areas at the time in poverty, but what little they had as a community, and the former mayor of Galway, Bridie O'Flaherty's family would have engaged and supported them as well, because everybody did it behind the scenes. So the girls, the Gardaí, were looking in Galway for the girls. They were looking at the train station. They kept a watch out. And Hugh McEntee knew he had to go outside of Galway to bring them to safety. So he went to either Oranmore or he went to Athenry station, actually, a lot of the time, or Woodlawn, because he had to get even further away. And if the girls were caught, they were brought back. And that is one thing that the state has not truly recognised. The girls were detained without charge, and they were brought back to be enslaved again. And one lady, a manager of a laundry, spoke about three of the accidents that happened. Health and safety was out the window. One lady lost her forearm in the large roller, dry, you know, the way they pulled through the sheets, and nothing was done. You know, it was her own fault, is basically the evidence he gave. Now, when we consider that Áras an Uachtaráin sent its laundry to the Magdalen Laundry in Dublin, Ashford Castle sent its laundry from Galway. 11 of the institutions of state, you know, the Department of Defence or whatever, Department of Education, sent their laundry. And the women, in certain cases, the local authorities continue to pay capitation for the women, depending on how they entered the laundry.
Yeah, now, so, in terms of that, and as I said, these vans toured the towns collecting laundry, bringing it back to be washed by these women. Householders got their sparkling white linen back, never suspecting the conditions under which they were being laundered. But this escape of the three or four women, who then were spirited away and either went off to England or other parts of the country, it was only one of a number. In total, Ina McEntee and her family, and amazingly, her husband, this is such a heartwarming story, and these young people, and the local community. I know Merview. I went to college in Galway, so I know Galway well.
Okay.
And but at the time you're talking about, back in the 50s and 60s, in particular the 60s, it was an impoverished area. But she did it again and again, up to a total of 15 women. How was she eventually found out?
They did it four times in total. And she was at home, and she received a letter and wages in it from the sisters, advising her that her services were no longer required. So they knew that somebody inside, and they found out. Now, you do know that, of course, the consecrated Magdalens were, there were few nuns engaged in it, but they appointed women who devoted their lives to the church. And so they were Magdalen women themselves, impoverished too, and, you know,
and they were called consecrated Magdalens.
They were, because, you see, there are 41 of them now. I've documented the names of each Magdalen woman that I could find buried in Galway. There are 88 in the Bohermore Cemetery. But the Magdalen, consecrated Magdalens, rather, are within the confines of Foster Street. And they were within where the laundry was. And the promise made to them was that they would be laid to rest within where the nuns, near where the nuns themselves are laid to rest. So they were elevated, if you like. So one of them may have told on Ina, or somehow it was found out that it was an inside job, because the girls were not found. They were not coming back, and they were well hidden.
And the nuns never let on that there's three of the women gone, now there's another four gone, now there's another four gone. They never let on to any of the other women within the institution until Ina McEntee got this letter saying, we no longer need your work here, you're terminated, and so forth. So it's a remarkable story, and today these two women, Patricia Burke Brogan, and posthumously, unfortunately and regrettably, Ina McEntee, will be both honoured with the freedom of Galway City. I know her son Andy is still alive. Is her husband still alive?
No, her husband's passed away. There's Andy, I'll meet them later. There's Andy, Hugo and Declan, and their families are all coming along today. But I have to say, I'm so proud of our mayor, because once I made the application and I had to submit it with, you know, all the evidence as to why these should be honoured at this point. And when we sat there, the McEntees and myself, on the day that they approved it, every councillor, one after another, agreed the proposal. Nobody right. objected, which is really heartening. And today there will be a plaque unveiled on the Magdalen building at about 2:30. At 3:30 we will go to the former Great Southern Hotel, the Hardiman Hotel, and there is a ceremony there where the freedom of the city will be bestowed to those two ladies. So I do feel it's because of my intervention, but it's long due, and I'm so glad that we have a mayor that looks favourably on these okay. type of applications to balance the subject.
Well, I have to say, Breda Murphy, you're one of the heroes of this entire story of these women and their babies and the so-called mother and babies homes, and you've been so generous with your time sharing with us here. Just not data about Galway or whatever else, but even data about here in Kildare and the various homes, whether it was Dunboyne or Shan Ross or others yeah. Within the county. But it's so uplifting to hear the story of these wonderful women, Patricia Burke-Brogan, but in particular Ina McEntee, who coordinated the escape. And escape has to be the operative word, otherwise why were there bars on the windows? Of 15 yeah. women from the yeah. former Magdalen Laundry, helped by her husband and sons, and they are honoured too. Have a great, great day, Breda.
Thank you so much, Clem.
Thank you indeed. And what a wonderful story. I think that's a great, great way to start today's programme. Well done, all concerned.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
KFM. You know, folks, the more I reflect on that story about Ina McEntee and her family springing 15 women from the Magdalen Laundry over a period of months in County Galway, it's like something you'd see in one of those prison escape films during the times of slavery down south in the United States. But it was happening in this country. Women fleeing for their lives, just jumping up, running up laneways, jumping into vans, being spirited away to train stations outside of the city, and then going to, not maybe necessarily back to their families, some of them maybe, but others taking the boat to England. You know, we have a sad and sorry history that has to be fully redressed yet. Ciara.
I'm joined now, Clem, on the line by Councillor Suzanne Doyle of Fianna Fáil and of Kildare Newbridge Municipal District. Good morning.
Morning, Ciara. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. We're going to begin here, Suzanne, with what you received from this motion. It was a very lengthy reply. You asked the council to explore potential sources. This is of additional funding, both private and public, to create synergies that will enhance grant opportunities, innovation for climate change, and improve competition results for the Tidy Towns groups in the Kildare Newbridge MD. Go through that response, Suzanne, please.
Oh, well, I suppose what I was looking for, and the response is very detailed, and I think we'd have to acknowledge the Kildare County Council has made strident improvements in how we're engaging around climate change and issues of environment, and even if you look at how well-resourced it is. But what I particularly see coming out of this, when you take large, say, bin operators within our county, I think there are opportunities there to engage with them in terms of the delivery of bins that are more efficient and more environmentally friendly, because there's a big cost investment. So large areas like Dunleary Rathdown have the resources to go out and spend up to $1 million, which I believe they have, on acquiring new bins that will achieve that. We don't have those resources. I happen to chair the SPC in Environment. So for the last couple of meetings, we've been looking at the rollout of bins throughout the county. And it's not necessarily in the most efficient manner, and it's quite costly. People will recall last summer when we had lovely weather, there was all of these complaints coming in about areas that were well serviced and the bins were teeming. Now, that's an area that either hasn't got enough bins or has not been emptied frequently enough. Sometimes the solution to that are the big belly bins. Now, that wasn't simply just one of the motions or one of the objectives, but I see that as one of the outcomes that possibly could come in. And I think there are benefits for some of the large service providers in terms of AES, etc., to be seen to be supporting the community. So I'd like to see engagement there. Then at a more global level, We have amazing Tidy Towns groups within the county. We're just so fortunate. I think they get an awful lot out of it. They take pride in their place and they set a great example. So I think the engagement of shared learning with those groups, even maybe to do, Joe Boland, who happens to be our Director of Service and Director of Environment, suggested maybe doing a trip to somewhere like Glasslough or some of the towns within Ireland or even Northern Ireland that have exhibited innovation in how they've applied, because the thinking around Tidy Towns is no longer planting flowers. We all know that. It's about the biodiversity and all of those things. So I think maybe a workshop with Tidy Towns groups to sit down and explore all the options outlined in the response and maybe do the fan trip. But side by side, someone at the scale of the County Council, we need to be more commercially minded about partnerships with the private sector.
And if Suzanne, just in terms of meetings with those Tidy Town groups, any update on when they could possibly happen?
Well, Joe made a commitment to put that in place. I suppose we have to go back to the Tidy Town groups and engage with them to see when is optimum for them. Very conscious this is a busy time for them, out cleaning, preparing for the inspectors to be about, the planting is starting. Really, it's in their hands. Whenever it suits them, we will feel in with that.
Okay, going to move to traffic issues here. You asked the council to examine mitigation measures. That was to improve the safety of the Bad Blind Bend, is how you call it. It's just beyond Newtown Cross on route to Athy. You asked for it to be examined, long-term measures to align the road as provided for through previous planning permission.
Well, I have to acknowledge my colleague Mark Stafford had the very same motion down. We both got a similar response. So the engineer has committed to go out and do some mitigation in terms of lining. It's really a blind bend. And when we use the word that it's a route to Athy, but it's also the main route to their retail outlet village. So it's become increasingly busy and therefore more dangerous. The area has become relatively built up. There's quite a large nursing home there that people would walk out to visit family, etc. And on a previous planning permission, a commitment was given by the landowner to give over the land that would align that road. Now, that's going to be costly, so we need to get on the capital programme. But the first step is, I suppose, doing the mitigation measures with the lining of the road, which the engineer has agreed to do, and then I suppose we assess it from there, because I think there's going to further work down at Newtown Cross. I can see the roundabout or traffic lights being required at that point, and when that happens, we might be able to couple both projects together to get the funding required.
Okay. Suzanne, just before you go, I know you want to give a word as well on the market bylaws for the MD.
Yeah. This is a project we've been working on for a long time. In fact, it's been on the agenda in Kildare Town for many years, but recently a member of staff in Kildare County Council has taken it on with great gusto, and we've now brought in bylaws, which I think will start in September. Now, I accept for established markets like Kildare on a Thursday, that's going to be a big change. So we've no certainty around the success, but we're going to make every effort that there will be. We're also looking at Georgia Street in Newbridge, and I suppose our thinking behind this is throughout COVID, we could see a shift in activity and habits. Constantly money has been invested in public realm, but unless you activate that space positively, we're not going to get the benefits out of it. So it's to put in markets that will be attractive, commercially viable and sustainable, and will actually become destination. Again, we see in areas like Dunleary Rattan that has been hugely successful. So we need to revitalise our town centres. This is a very effective way to do it, and it's an organic way to support smaller Indigenous business and give a unique experience to consumers. And we need to compete with the big high street a bit out of town.
Okay, I appreciate you joining me this morning. That is Councillor Suzanne Doyle of Fianna Fáil and Kildare Newbridge MD.
Thank you, Suzanne. Thank you, Ciara, for that. A couple of quick messages before we move on. Something of interest to people over 65 in the North Kildare area, over 60 even, maybe. Ciara, I have it in good authority that Stephen Gerrard, Philip Coutinho and Danny Ings are going to try their utmost to stuff Man City to hand the title to Liverpool. Fingers crossed, up the pool, says Rob Dunn in Robertstown. Simon Campbell, thanks for the message, Simon. Just to let drivers know, the traffic lights are out at the bridge on the Green Road outside Kilcullen. Clem, a lovely swarm of bees have landed on some listeners' particular place here. I look at the audio in a couple of minutes' time in regards to that. Anyone looking into the Nuns' Laundry in Athy, says Chris. Well, there were laundries right around the town, the country, Chris, and I'm sure many of them My information, well, I'm not going to comment actually on any particular one at the minute, just in case I say the wrong thing. That was religion at the time. These poor women were beaten into submission. Mick and Mead, you're laying a lot of this on the nuns. I have to be fair here. Yes, there were nuns who were rather cruel in the way they dealt with these women. There were also many, many hundreds of nuns who were kind, caring, concerned, and represented their vocation to the full. I am not for a moment excusing any ill treatment carried out by anyone. But first and foremost, the state and society and families colluded in allowing this to happen, turned our heads away. Did I mention the church, by the way, in general? Of course, along with the state and the people of Ireland. We turned our heads away. We regarded these women as shamed, as being unclean. Why otherwise did we call them Mary Magdalene? Because Mary Magdalene was represented as a prostitute in the Bible. So by tagging this term on these women, this is the type of denigration that we apply to them. Is that gone altogether, by the way? That attitude. Is that attitude? Thankfully, times have changed. Thankfully. But there would be still cohorts out there who would still have that whole attitude of, look at your one. She's pregnant. She's not even married. That sort of small-mindedness. But when we talk and when we start to throw stones at particular groups, whether they be nuns or brothers or priests, and yes, many of them are guilty of the most extreme wrongdoing, let's not forget to include the state, the church, An Garda Síochána as an institution, and society in terms when we're attributing blame. On.
Yeah, this next piece that we're going to do, Clem, I think is a brilliant, brilliant idea. Maynooth University is looking for people aged 65 and over to meet in small groups and to walk through the community while sharing their memories. Now, it's aimed primarily at people who have Alzheimer's or early onset Alzheimer's disease. And Dr. Richard Roach, he's Associate Professor and Deputy Head of the Psychology Department at Maynooth University. He's on the line now. Dr. Roach, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Hi, Owen. Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
As I say, this is something that when I read about it, I was fascinated by. I think it's a super, super idea. Where did it come from, the idea?
We've been doing work over the past few years where we're looking at things that people can do to try and keep their memory in good shape into later life. And we know a couple of things that work quite well are things like actively using our memories, because often when people retire or get into later life, they kind of don't have a lot of cause to actually challenge themselves and try and stretch their memory. So actively reminiscing is one thing that seems to work quite well, and physical exercise is another one. So what we wanted to do with this project, which we're doing in tandem with the Alzheimer's Society and with the Irish Research Council, is try to combine those two things. So we'd have people actively reminiscing about, in this case, the town of Maynooth, while they engage in physical exercise in a walking group. So our plan is to bring people around Maynooth through different routes that we've designed in and through the town, and try and get them to probe their memories as they walk around and challenge themselves by thinking, okay, who used to live there, or what was the name of that pub years ago, or what used to be in that field, so that we can try and combine the benefits of reminiscence with physical exercise.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. And I know from personal experience of having people in my family who had Alzheimer's disease that, you know, they can lose the memory, maybe short-term memory, but I remember even speaking to people and they could remember things from when they were 5, 6, 7 years of age growing up in a certain area. So that really is going to be beneficial, I think, for those people.
Absolutely, yeah. And what we're hoping is we'll find that as they're going to these different places and locations in Maynooth and along the canal and through the university, that those places will act as triggers to bring back maybe specific memories for events or childhood reminiscences or just moments that come back in very clear, vivid form when you're in the place.
Okay, and how do people get involved then if they want to, or perhaps a family member is listening that thinks this might be great for mom or dad or whatever around the Maynooth area? So how do they get in touch and get involved in this project?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can give us a call. We have the number here for the project. So it's 087-398-5702. That's 087-398-5702. And you get to see myself or Cassie or Carmen, the other members of the team who are going to be working on this. And yeah, we'll give you some more details and see if people might want to take part.
And do you have a timeline on when it's going to start, or are you waiting to see what the response is like before you set out some particular dates? Or have you started already?
Yeah, so we've started to recruit already, and we're hoping to kick off in the next couple of weeks. So hopefully, while the weather is decent, we'll be able to bring people out throughout the next month or so, with an aim to have it finished by the end of June.
Super. Super, super stuff. I think we'll be in touch with you again, Richard, because we would like to keep people updated on this as well as, you know, when it starts. And that number again, if people want to get in touch and get involved in this project, it's 087-398-5702. Maynooth University, looking for people age 65 and up, particularly with early onset Alzheimer's, to meet up in small groups around the Maynooth area, walk through the community and share their memories, reminiscing and combining both physical exercise and reminiscing together. Great stuff. Dr. Richard Roach, Associate Professor and Deputy Head of the Psychology Department with Maynooth University. Thanks for joining us, Richard.